You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, news broke earlier this week that a Saudi Arabian student was killed at UW Stout this weekend, sparking fears in the community that the crime might be racially motivated. We'll discuss the impact his death is having on the campus. First, tax cuts have been a point of pride for Governor Walker since he took office more than 5 years ago. In May of this year, the Department of Revenue estimated that nearly $424 million had been returned to Wisconsin taxpayers by income tax cuts alone. But while these cuts returned money to residents, that meant there was less money for state services like public education. How did these tax cuts impact the state? How does Wisconsin compare to other states which implemented similar tax policies? Joining us now to answer these questions is Simon Montlake. He's a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. His piece, How Tax Cuts Changed Wisconsin, was published this week. Simon, welcome to Central Time.
It's good to be here.
Well, set things up for us at first. Talk about when these tax cuts came into effect. What was the case made for them? How extensive were they?
Well, when Governor Walker took office in 2010, of course, it was during the Great Recession, and so clearly there was big challenges to the budget in Wisconsin and in many states. Revenues were down, tax take was down, growth had faltered. So there was a what they call a structural deficit, meaning that the money that agencies needed in the state budget was always going to be more than was coming in. So Governor Walker made very clear as he campaigned that we're going to cut taxes and keep them as low as possible. So there were modest tax cuts in the first budget. It was more the pressure was more on controlling spending. The second budget was from 2013 to 2015. There was much more tax cuts in that budget. And then now this was both on individuals, income tax. It was keeping down property taxes, and crucially, it was on companies. There was a new credit available for manufacturing agriculture, which essentially zeroed out their tax rate. And in addition to that, there's some other sort of incentive programs for investment, which would, again, provide tax credits to companies. So, I mean, there were billions of dollars in tax cuts, and some of this has continued now. Of course, some of these stay in place. But there isn't really much room to cut much more at the moment. So I think what we've seen is a persistent attempt to keep taxes as low as possible, particularly on companies and on higher earning individuals. And so really we're several years into this now, and so I think it's fair to say show me the results to look at what this tax-cutting policy has achieved.
Right, and as I understand it, the political and economic case made here is cut taxes, leave more money in the hands of both individuals and, as you mentioned, companies. They're going to spend, they're going to invest, they're going to hire more people. That's going to help the economy, which in turn will help the state budget. More economic activity ultimately means more revenue. So in this piece, you're trying to set out to measure that. What kind of things did you try to sort out?
Well, yeah, I mean, the case you laid out is known as supply-side economics. I mean, if you go back to the 1980s, it became the sort of Reagan-era orthodoxy. It began in the 70s as a slightly obscure economic theory. And, the basic idea was, as you just laid it out, that by cutting taxes, particularly on job creators, on the wealthy, on companies, that would then, produce the economic growth that rewards you. I mean, the idea, though, that it would produce the same revenues is a very controversial one. I mean, if you look at the evidence, it doesn't really hold up. The fact is, if you cut taxes, you can probably argue that it will produce some growth. However, you're going to collect less revenue in your budget. And most economists say this is just the way it is. It's not going to pay for itself in the medium term, talking, say, 5 to 7 years. Now, you could argue that doesn't matter because, the growth itself is the goal. But, I mean, you have to be very careful of people that sort of think you can, have your cake and eat it, that you can both, cut taxes, get growth, and get the same amount of revenue coming in. Because without the revenue coming in, then something has to give, and what has to give usually is public spending. The way I looked at it in Wisconsin was fairly simple. It was just looking at the budgets, how much revenue came in, how the growth did, how the governor did on job creation, which again was one of his priorities. And, I'm not trying to say that it's a disaster by any means. I mean, Wisconsin's economy has clearly come back quite strongly in some ways. On the other hand, so has the United States. So you know, you have to look at it and say, is this really outperforming? Is this tracking what other similar states with similar industries have? And I think, you know, in some respects, Wisconsin's done a bit better in the last year or so, if you look at the 2015 data. But if you go back to, you know, the recession and since the recession, I don't think you could argue that its recovery has been spectacular. And it certainly hasn't outperformed in the way that these, you know, the tax-cutting proponents would argue. And there are some reasons for that. I mean, it's hard. The reality is that what drives the economy doesn't change that radically. If you're in a state which has a lot of oil and gas, the oil and gas price goes up, you have some good years, and when that crashes, there's not much you can do. It doesn't really matter what your tax rate is. You're going to have less growth, less jobs, less revenue. If you are in New York and you have financial services, when those do very well, you're going to have more tax revenue. You're going to have more jobs. I mean, Wisconsin is, you know, as of course you know, I mean, agriculture and manufacturing is still very strong, but then again, so is services. So that's what you have to work with. That is the existing mix of economic factors. And, you know, I do think tax cuts can be useful. They can achieve goals. There's no doubt about it. And clearly, if taxes are too high, that has the opposite effect. That can hold back economic growth. But you still have to ask the question, is cutting taxes to the level that Wisconsin has done, which means less revenue for the government to spend on public services, is that ultimately the right way to chart an economic course over many years ahead? Because these are long-term forces at play.
We're talking to Simon Montlake, reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, looking at the impact of tax cuts here in Wisconsin. And Simon, in your piece, you actually went and talked to two different groups. You talked, first of all, to some employers. What did you hear from the employers you talked to about whether the changing tax situation in Wisconsin had affected what they were doing?
Well, they are positive on that. They Governor Walker is seen as someone who's very receptive to what business leaders are looking for. They want their state to be seen nationally and globally as an attractive place to invest, and taxes do feed into that. So there's positive news there. However, you have to remember, if you're talking about multinationals and where they locate their facilities, where they choose to invest, you know, in many cases, I mean, the state tax rate is just not a big calculation. They're looking at available land. They're looking at the broader regulatory framework. They need to know if there's going to be enough of a workforce there. Will there be a pipeline of young people, the people with the right skills, the right education? I think that infrastructure and education seem to weigh, I mean, if you look at surveys of people working with relocation industries and site selectors, I mean, they put a great weight on those things. I'm not sure that the state income tax or corporate tax rate really weighs that heavily. Now, that said, some of the companies I spoke to could point to very specific investments that they had made in which the lower tax rates and tax incentives made a difference. Now, you know, they're investing money, private money, in facilities, factories, warehouses, delivery sites, and they're hiring more people, and in turn, they will then, you know, consume more local goods, helps the real estate market. I mean, there is a virtuous cycle going on there. So I wanted to make sure that was shown in my story. But again, you always have to weigh it against what is happening in terms of the government budget.
And yeah, I want to jump in and get to some other groups you talked to. You focused in on a suburban, education advocacy group in the Milwaukee area, in Wauwatosa in particular. What kind of things were you hearing there about the impact of state budget changes, budget cuts to education?
Well, I mean, in some ways, this is a fairly affluent, successful district. I mean, this is not, they are not, I don't want to say that they are the suffering types. I mean, they have got a good local school system that they're trying to defend. And I think what they saw is that when the state did not have the revenues perhaps that it hoped for from its economic pump priming, what it tried to do, what Governor Walter proposed doing in his last budget, was cutting money from K-12 education. I mean, K-12 education is a very complicated area in terms of you know, funding from the local taxes, state taxes, the federal money. It's a very, you know, the complicated formula for how much schools get. So it wasn't the case that they were seeing massive cuts coming, but they were expecting that they would lose some services, perhaps lose a teacher or two. And it just seemed to them to be a trend that there was sort of a cutting away at something which they, and I guess many people are proud of in Wisconsin, which is a, you know, a strong public education system, a, you know, great university system. People are very proud of this and want to protect it. And there was, I was, you know, interested in just understanding these, you know, fairly, you know, middle class, upper middle class people, and what really had got their goat. Why they sort of formed a group and you know, gone into public advocacy on this issue. And you know, I also found from talking to people working in rural school areas, and I went out to another rural school area as well, didn't make it into the story. They're facing, you know, even more pressure, in fact, on budget, the difficulty of retaining teachers. I mean, this, in some ways, this gets onto Act 10, which is, you know, a whole topic in itself. And this is not a story about Act 10. But I do think that schools is probably the area where you have both, you know, it's the biggest part of the government budget. So it's the easiest place to make cuts from. But it's also a very large constituency of people who feel very passionately about public education. And at the same time, you do have this, you know, voucher choice movement, which the Republican Party in the legislature and the governor is very supportive of. And they have siphoned more and more money, which is for public education, into that sector, which essentially goes into private institutions. So there is some tension around that as well. And I did, you know, use that in my story. But I think the key question here is, you know, if education is such an important driver of an economy, of a modern economy, because we're not going back, we're going forwards, and it's only going to be that case, you know, what is the downside risk to a state like Wisconsin from chipping away at the money it spends on public schools educating the workforce of tomorrow?
We'll leave it there, Simon. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Nice talking with you.
Simon Montlake is a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. He recently wrote a piece called How Tax Cuts Changed Wisconsin.